The next matter on for oral argument this morning is State of Minnesota v. Buck. Counsel, each of you will have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 minutes to appellant's counsel for rebuttal, if you'd like to use it. If you're not familiar with our lectern, there's a little button in front that allows you to raise or lower it to your height for your convenience. And the timing restrictions are indicated in the light and clock in the lectern as well. Please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument, and you may begin when you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel. May it please the court, my name is Jessica Mers-Gaddis, and I represent Manuel Buck, the appellant. Mr. Buck has raised 8 issues in this case, and the state has conceded 3 of the sentencing issues. So given the issues remaining and the limited time we have for argument, I hope to do 2 things. First, I want to clarify a factual matter that is crucial for this court to understand in order to properly decide the second issue raised in appellant's brief regarding the validity of Mr. Buck's convictions. Second, I'd like to address the legal issues involving the aggravated sentence for attempted burglary. And of course, answer any questions that the court may have. Regarding the factual matter, this has to do with the 2018 video of Mr. Buck that was introduced by the state in rebuttal. The state asserts that in that video, it involved Mr. Buck's statements that he was, quote, planning to steal guns from a gun store, and that he wanted to kill, quote, anyone interfering with a planned attempt to steal firearms. That's a factually inaccurate description of that video. Nowhere in that video, which is Exhibit 170, does Mr. Buck talk about planning to steal guns or about killing anyone who interfered with any supposed planned attempt to steal those guns. The only thing that Mr. Buck talks about in that video is committing a mass shooting, targeting specific people, and avoiding specific people. This fact is crucial for this court to understand, to properly analyze why this video evidence was neither relevant and was unfairly prejudicial.
Before you move on with your other, to either elaborate further on that or move on with your other arguments, I want to make sure I understand the relief you're seeking.
Yes.
In this case. Do you seek a new trial on the attempted burglary and attempted theft convictions?
We have presented arguments requesting that relief, yes. We also understand as an alternative that this court might determine that the appropriate relief is simply a new trial on the attempted murder conviction.
It strikes me that the 2018 video, which admission is the focus of your new trial motions, seems to relate to the attempted murder convictions and not so much to attempted burglary.
I would agree with that, Your Honor. However, I would add to that that what we have to remember about this video, what is so damaging about this video overall, and again, although we acknowledge that it would seem to go more specifically problematically to the murder count, why this is also problematic as a general matter is that, again, what he's talking about here is committing a mass shooting event, targeting specific people, but also targeting civilians in the community. So in this day and age where we are so concerned with, and unfortunately somewhat used to, having mass shootings as a regular occurrence, what this video does is transform this case into one that's not about self-defense, which is where it should be, but one about a fear that this is a dangerous person that needs to be convicted and locked up and put away for as long as possible to protect the community. So for that reason, we would ask this court to at least consider also offering granting a new trial on all of the convictions. The one other point I wanted to make on this factual matter before I leave it is that, again, the district court had excluded this video from the state's case in chief, recognizing that it was unfairly prejudicial. And when the district court changed its mind and allowed the state to introduce it in rebuttal, the district court said nothing about why this video was suddenly no longer unfairly prejudicial. And the state has made no argument in their brief addressing the unfairly prejudicial aspect of this evidence.
Did the district court give any type of a limiting instruction when admitting this as rebuttal evidence?
No, Your Honor, none whatsoever. And
An instruction requested by trial counsel?
No, not requested. But that is really neither here nor there because we are not raising this as an instruction issue. This is something, the lack of instruction is something that this court would certainly consider as a relevant factor in why an erroneous admission of this video is not harmless. And on that point, all of the factors that this court considers for harmless error weigh in favor of finding that it was harmful and that reversal is required. It's not just the lack of a cautionary instruction by the district court. It's also that the prosecutor referred to this evidence immediately and repeatedly throughout the principal closing argument and her own rebuttal argument. Also, the state's evidence of intent to kill here was not overwhelming. This is undisputedly a self-defense case where self-defense was instructed. And factually speaking, it's undisputed that the two alleged victims in the case, who go by the initials FS and JS, initiated this confrontation. They chased Mr. Buck. Mr. Buck ran away. And that Mr. Buck used force only after these two men, who were larger than he, caught up to him. And it's also undisputed that Mr. Buck was seriously beaten by FS in this physical encounter. So given those circumstances and those undisputed facts that I just recited to the court, again, I go back to the very real possibility here that what happened with this rebuttal video, the very last piece of evidence that this jury sees before they go into deliberations, transforms this case out of where it should have been, thinking about the witnesses' testimonies, one, whether it was self-defense or whether it was not. That's what the jury should have been deciding, whether the state met its burden to disprove that Mr. Buck acted in self-defense. And instead, what they're talking about is this scary video with Mr. Buck ruminating on this idea of committing a mass shooting in their community, targeting civilians, store owners, and police officers.
How do you respond to the state's argument that the jury did its job and the admission of the video was harmless, given that they acquitted on one of the second-degree murder charges?
I don't think that that argument has much merit, Your Honor, given what the testimony was in this case. The evidence here is that that victim, if I have it right, I believe it was JS, is the acquitted victim in this case. He testified that he sustained the cut to his hand when he reached in to take the machete away. JS is the second person into this confrontation, and so he testifies about seeing Mr. Buck and his brother FS struggling on the ground and the machete being wielded. And JS very clearly testifies that when I reached in to try and disarm Mr. Buck with the machete, that's when my hand was cut. I think that does the most to explain what the jury's acquittal about that count, why that happened.
I guess the question is, regarding your concern of overarching prejudice from the video, the acquittal there would show some deliberation by the jury that would indicate that there was a basis for the jury's determination apart from the what you're arguing is the prejudicial nature of the mass shooting video, for lack of any other description.
I think if I understand your question correctly, Your Honor, I mean, we would certainly acknowledge that there was sufficient evidence for the jury to find him guilty of the attempted intentional murder count. We haven't raised sufficiency as an issue in this case. But again, when we're talking about harmless error on an evidentiary error, we're not concerned at all about whether there was sufficient evidence. We're talking about the impact.
No, I guess my question is, we often look at, when it comes to prejudice, is there any indication that the jury was deliberative and based its decision on factors other than the prejudicial evidence, the inappropriate prejudicial evidence, allegedly prejudicial evidence? And in this case, wouldn't the jury's acquittal indicate that it wasn't just putting a rubber stamp on all of the prosecutor's theories of conviction?
I'm not quite sure that I understand your point differently than I already answered at, so forgive me for that. I don't mean to just be stonewalling here.
Probably means I offered a bad question.
No, I don't mean that either. I just mean that, I take your point. I do think that the record in this case would support your conclusion that the jury did carefully consider the evidence in this case. It certainly did its job. All I am suggesting is that to the state's argument that something can be inferred here as to the lack of prejudice by the split verdict, I don't think that's a valid argument. The other point that I wanted to address with the court today has to do with the upward departure on the attempted burglary. The state first argues that, in their words, quote, extensive planning is a valid reason to support the departure in this case. But importantly, please understand, the state concedes that the jury made no finding whatsoever about when Mr. Buck started planning this burglary. And without that jury finding about when the planning began, there's necessarily no basis to conclude that that planning was extensive. That's not a valid aggravating factor in this case. The state then moves on to argue that this is one of the extremely rare cases that supports a greater than double departure, and it offers you three reasons for that. The first being a suggestion that this burglary was part of Mr. Buck's larger plan to commit murder using the firearm stolen from the trading post. Again, Your Honors, that is not a fact found by the jury. The jury made no finding whatsoever regarding Mr. Buck having a larger plan to commit murder. It's very important that this court look carefully at the jury's findings and understand that nothing there ties this burglary in any way back in time to 2018 when the video was created or to any specific time in the past. Nor is there any factual finding by the jury that connects this burglary to any future plan. There's nothing in those interrogatories that shed any light whatsoever on whether Mr. Buck had a future plan to do anything at all, let alone to commit murder. That's why the facts that are found by the jury do not support any departure in this case, let alone the greater than double departure. It was a five-time double departure in this case. The other two arguments that the state makes in that regard have to do with what could have happened if Mr. Buck had been successful in burglarizing the pawn shop and obtaining those guns. And they talk about it in terms of it could have made his fantasy of committing a mass shooting a reality. Your Honors, the state is asking you to affirm a five-time upward departure based on speculation and fear about what Mr. Buck might have done in the future without any facts found by the jury to support that kind of a conclusion. There is nothing about the facts that are found by the jury that indicate that this attempted burglary was significantly more serious than the typical, and there are certainly no severe aggravating factors in this case to justify anything greater than a double departure. Your Honors, those are the two points that I wanted to make. I'm happy to answer any other questions. Otherwise, I would rely on the arguments made in the brief and made today in asking the court to reverse Mr. Buck's convictions. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court, my name is George Kennedy. I'm an assistant Sherburne County attorney, and I appear on behalf of respondent, the state of Minnesota. In response to appellant's argument about that video that was admitted as rebuttal evidence, just to provide some context, that was offered after Mr. Buck had testified that he lacked intent to harm anybody during this incident.
Yeah, so what did a video done 3 years earlier when he was only 15 years old have to do with his rebuttal testimony or with his testimony on direct exam?
Well, he had testified about a complete lack of intent to harm anybody in this sort of incident, and the state...
Well, not anybody in this particular incident.
Correct. In this particular incident that he was tried for, correct. And as rebuttal evidence, the state had this video where he had talked about a plan to steal from a gun shop and kill specific individuals, including the gun store owner, law enforcement, SWAT, civilians. The only people he was excluding from that were family and children.
But how does...
Well, two problems I have with that, and you can address. First, a specific... You're saying that the video referred to a specific incident of going into a gun store in a specific circumstance and hurting specific people or even general people regarding that incident. And here he's testified that he didn't want to harm either of the two individuals in this incident. So explain how evidence of willingness or desire to harm people in the incident 3 years earlier would possibly constitute legitimate rebuttal evidence to his statement that he didn't want to harm anyone in this incident.
Well, he had the state was entitled to offer evidence that explained or contradicted what he was saying during that trial. And this evidence showed that there was a plan for this sort of burglary or this sort of theft where he was going to take firearms and commit a crime, and anyone that or people that stood in his way were going to face the consequences of their action. So the state was entitled to use this evidence to push back on his claim and let the jury evaluate his credibility and consider what he was saying in the moment of trial against how he'd previously spoken about a similar circumstance that he was contemplating.
If you were correct about that, I'm not convinced personally at this point, but what would be the basis for the prosecutor then telling the jury that Buck told you in 2018 he intended to murder anyone who got in his way? Is that an accurate description of the video? Or is that an exaggeration?
There is some exaggeration to that, Your Honor. In the video, he explicitly stated that there were minor carve-outs of people that he was not contemplating harming in that earlier incident. So I acknowledge that there was perhaps some overstatement in how that was argued. However, the verdicts, the guilty verdict for the crimes committed against FS and the acquittals for the crimes committed against JS indicate that the jury was not swayed by that argument that there was an overwhelming, all-encompassing intent to kill anyone that got into Mr. Buck's way.
But that's not the facts of this case, right? Like that he was going to kill anybody who got in his way. He was running away from the two people who are chasing him. If he was consistent with the 2018 video, wouldn't he have then stood his ground or run towards the people to go and follow through with that 2018 intent?
And these were things that the defense argued, that his actions were not consistent with that intent from the video. And the jury agreed with the defense on that issue as to JS, that I think that the verdicts here show that instead of buying into that argument, the jury looked at the evidence, the physical evidence and the testimony from FS, JS, and Buck himself to evaluate what had actually happened and concluded that there was intent to murder FS when Mr. Buck turned instead of continuing to run and charged down at FS with the machete and swung it at his head. But there was not the same intent once JS became involved in the physical confrontation. So I think that the split verdicts here indicate that the jury was not giving weight to that testimony if the court thinks it was error, and instead looked at the actual circumstances from this case to decide what happened and whether Mr. Buck was guilty.
So the conversation up until now that we've been having is more about the relevance of the video. But when the district court initially excluded, the court said it's not relevant and it's unfairly prejudicial. And the ruling to allow it after the rebuttal, in rebuttal, the ruling was, it seems now it's relevant. But the district court didn't rule on the unfairly prejudicial. And so that prior ruling seems to be still out there. So why, what do we do with that?
The district court required additional redactions before the video could be presented, if I recall correctly. So there was more of the video that had been initially offered. The district court said, if this is coming in, this additional portion needs to be redacted from it. So the court was considering that prejudice versus probative value when it was revisiting that decision and required additional redactions before it could go before the jury. So I think that there is a record showing that that was reconsidered as well. If there are no further questions on that issue regarding the aggravated sentence, the court looks at the facts that support an aggravated sentence as a whole. It does not necessarily, it looks at the record as a whole to consider those. The court did say that this plan went back to 2018, and I acknowledge that the facts found by the jury did not explicitly include a fact that the plan started in 2018. And Mr. Buck is relying on that to argue that there was not extensive planning. But the actions that happened leading up to this incident, the acquisition of multiple different tools, of ammunition, of gun cases, and the tools that he planned to use to cover up this burglary if he had been successful, all show that there was an extensive plan that he attempted to execute.
Even if we agree with you that the jury's Blakely findings are sufficient to conclude that an aggravated sentence on attempted burglary is appropriate, why should this court affirm the district court's fivefold go to the statutory max sentence? I have a hard time concluding any of these circumstances would be severe aggravating in circumstances. Why am I wrong about that?
In isolation, I agree that any one of those facts that were found would not be an aggravating circumstance, but taken together, those 18 facts that the jury did find, we believe, is...
How did they make the burglary offense aggravated? I mean, a lot of them have to do with what he's going to do afterwards, but this was an attempted burglary. He didn't get any of the guns that he wanted to get. How do these Blakely findings go beyond simply planning out a burglary? Not what you're going to do after the burglary.
Could you rephrase the question, please?
Well, and I'm sorry. I mean, I'm just having a hard time it seems to me that by this concluding that these are severe aggravating circumstances, that the district court was really considering more this broader plan to commit a mass shooting at some undetermined time expressed in 2015 rather than the circumstances as to how carefully he planned the burglary or the attempted burglary.
And I think that what I would point to there is the evidence that came in about the ammunition that he acquired and how it was related to specific firearms that he planned to steal if he had been successful in this incident. So we are not just looking at
How does that make the burglary offense itself severely aggravated?
What makes this an extreme case is the fact that if Mr. Buck had been successful, he would have had everything that he needed to commit a mass shooting. He would have had both the ammunition and the firearms at his disposal.
We have no idea if he would have actually done that. You're really relying back on a 15-year-old's musing in his bedroom about what he might do, aren't you?
I think that the sheer scope of the ammunition that he had accumulated indicates that this was more than just an interest in obtaining firearms. And this is a little bit more challenging because, yes, this was an attempt. And there but for the grace of a working alarm system, this was just an attempted burglary. So I think that the record here, including the ammunition that he had, the multiple tools that he brought with him to try to break into this pawn shop. The fact that he was trying to break into the door that was closest to that, those where the weapons were stored inside the pawn shop, all points to a very in-depth plan for how he was going to commit this burglary, get away with it, and then indications of what he was going to do if he had been successful. So I think that all of those point to this is significantly more serious than the typical attempted burglary offense, because we do have all of these indications of what he would have done, what he hoped to do if he had acquired firearms. We even had...
What's the strongest case that would support sort of the predictive element of the aggravation of the sentence?
I'm afraid I don't have an answer for you. I can look into that and provide supplemental authority if the court wishes.
Is there anything in the law that would suggest that's a proper basis? I mean, you acknowledge you haven't found any cases, but is there anything that you found that would suggest that that is even the perspective that the district court ought to operate under?
Well, I think that there are two issues here. The first is that we have the extensive planning that was the basis for the, or the reason for departure. And then the court was entitled to explain whether that reason was found and how the circumstances made this more serious than the typical aggravated burglary or attempted burglary. So we're not looking for facts that were presented to the jury, because I think if we had presented evidence about other activities that Mr. Buck may have been involved in, or comments that he made about his what he hoped to do around this incident, we would be here arguing about whether that testimony was admissible, just as much as we're arguing about whether this is an appropriate departure.
I guess what I'm struggling with is whether there's any basis for my concern, but the tension between punishing someone for an act that has not occurred or punishing someone for planning an act that seems to be part of the current crime.
Well, we are punishing Mr. Buck for the attempted burglary and the attempted murder that he committed, not for some sort of hypothetical crime in the future. But what we are confronted with is specific facts that made it so this burglary is more concerning than the typical burglary. And if you go through and look at what opposing counsel has argued, when they're talking about why this is the same as a typical offense, they're talking about the items that he brought with him to conceal his identity, or that he brought tools with him, or items to carry what he had stolen away with him. But they don't confront the fact that he had this cache of ammunition, that some of it was specifically designed to create the maximum possible damage to a human body back at the park by his house. And his plan was to steal these guns and go back to that place and hold on to everything until he was ready for whatever the next step was. So this is an extreme case, I acknowledge, but it's the extreme case that deserves a statutory maximum sentence. And that's why we're asking you to affirm the verdicts and affirm the statutory maximum sentence for attempted first-degree burglary, but remand with an instruction to impose a consecutive guideline sentence for the attempted first-degree, or excuse me, attempted second-degree murder. Thank you.
I've got one more question, if I may. Part of the argument that you have about the reason we know this is more severe than a typical burglary has to be based on the video, because that shows his intent to do a mass shooting. Is that a proper consideration for the court to use at sentencing if we say that had to be excluded?
That gets complicated because there was not a bifurcated trial on the evidence for what came in as evidence of guilt versus evidence of the aggravating factors. And if the court has a concern about that rebuttal evidence, and also concludes that it affected the verdict, which I think that the split verdicts on FS and JS disproves, then there's a question of would it be relevant to the aggravating factors? And it isn't explicit to one of the 18 special questions that was asked of the jury, but I think that it could have been readdressed if we had split this into a guilt phase and a punishment phase. And also, I think it would have been fair evidence for the state to provide at sentencing as part of their argument for why the facts that were proven and were found by the jury make this an especially serious offense that deserved a statutory maximum sentence. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for appellant, any rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honors. Okay, a few points here. First, when opposing counsel started speaking, I heard them again refer to the video involving a plan to steal firearms from a gun shop. I cannot emphasize enough, and I believe Your Honors understand this, but I really cannot emphasize enough to look back at that video and understand that nowhere in that video does Mr. Buck make any statement about a plan to steal firearms from that gun shop. That is so important for you to understand to make a proper decision in this case.
Well, there is reference to, I mean, I suppose it'd have to be implied, but there's reference to shooting the gun shop clerk or clerks.
Absolutely. There's no question that he's talking about going to a gun store. What there is not is any evidence that what he's going to do there is steal firearms. He talks about this in terms of a midday event that's a spectacle to the public where he's fantasizing about what his kill count is going to be. Entirely different than the facts of this case where we've got him sneaking around under the cover of night trying to break into a closed business and then running away when the alarm sounds. Regarding this idea of the redactions that were made before it went to the jury, what I'd ask this court to understand is when we're talking about the district court's decision that this video was unfairly prejudicial before and not explaining why it wasn't again, this idea that there were redactions doesn't do anything to further respondents' argument here, because the point is the district court still recognized that the part that was shown to the jury was prejudicial then. And, of course, it's still prejudicial when it's introduced into rebuttal. So nothing about the redactions undermines that.
How would we know that the district court's redactions didn't satisfy the district court's concern about prejudice?
Because if you look back in the record, and I'm sorry I don't have the reference in front of me, but I know it's in my brief, when the court is talking about why this evidence is unfairly prejudicial, it's for all the reasons we've already discussed and that I've already articulated. This idea of what is unfairly prejudicial is his pontifications of committing this mass shooting event. And the record also establishes what is redacted is he goes on to talk about going to a hardware Hank and stealing pipe bombs from a hardware Hank. That is in line with another evidentiary ruling the court made excluding evidence related to pipe bombs. So if anything, the record establishes that the redactions that are made in the videos have to do with this pipe bomb evidence that was otherwise excluded. Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay.
Can you address the plausibility of assuming that the video is not appropriate rebuttal, mm-hmm. But is, inadmissible for the purposes of trial, but the admissibility for the purposes of sentencing?
Are you asking if it would somehow become?
Right.
I don't know how.
In this case, there wasn't a bifurcated jury for the trial and sentencing, but
sure.
But for the purposes, is there any circumstance in which the video could be admissible for the purposes only of determining the aggravated sentence?
I can't imagine how, Your Honor, just because of the nature of what the questions, the 18 special interrogatories that were put before the jury. And let's recall, so none of those, the video and what's talked about in the video don't inform how the jury would answer those 18 special interrogatories. And let's remember that it's the state that comes up with what those special interrogatories were. So if the state had done a better job of crafting its questions to have the jury find, for example, make a finding that Mr. Buck began planning this burglary back in 2018, then this is a different case or a different argument I would be making. If the state had crafted a jury verdict that talks about what was his Mr. Buck's plan after he committed this burglary, well, then, I'd be in a very different position here. But the state didn't come up with those questions, and the jury didn't make those findings. The last point I'd like to make briefly is just I heard Respondents' Counsel make a reference to the idea that there was so much extensive planning going into this burglary and it was only foiled by the grace of a working alarm. I take issue with that and this whole idea that the record establishes extensive planning here. What we know is this burglary was failed because this was a teenager who doesn't know what he's doing and didn't even anticipate that there would be a working burglary alarm at this burglary shop. So when he smacked on the window with a crowbar, that the burglar alarm would go off. There is simply nothing about any of the evidence or any of the findings by this jury that establishes that this was some kind of sophisticated mastermind burglary that would justify any kind of departure in this case. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. And thank you to both counsel for your briefing and for your oral argument today. Very helpful. Well done. The matter is submitted. We will issue our opinion within the statutory period. Thank you both.
Thank you.
And have a good afternoon.